Hi, Paul Johnson here, and occasionally on Folkin.com, with our downloadable interviews, we find ourselves having to split the interview into two, because being a singer and songwriter myself, when I talk to artists, I like to delve into their songwriting ways and means. The last time this happened was with Ralph McTell a few years back now. On this occasion, I'm talking to Virginia Kettle from Mary Hell, a fantastic songwriter indeed, and this interview is split into two parts, so relax and enjoy. Enjoy me talking to Virginia Kettle. Hello and welcome to another Folkin.com downloadable interview. A bit of a strange one, this one, because I'm in my little studio, virtually with Virginia Kettle on the screen. Wonders of technology. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm now known as Virginia Virtually Kettle.
I know, aren't we all? And it's so terrible, though. How have you coped with lockdown? What have you been up to?
Well, it's a question I've been asking others and myself quite a lot. How are we coping? I think we're, as a group, musicians are, you know, we're a bit heartbroken. We've sort of lost our, not just craft, but the connection that we have to live audiences, which I think for all of us, it is what makes our hearts beat. So we're really missing that. However, we have learned loads of new technology, learned how to, because, you know, nature is the mother of invention and we will not stop. So John's busy downstairs at the moment recording our next Mary Hell album.
Hey,
and
excellent.
Yeah, we've done a camping festival, Camping with the Kettles, where we just went out, we broadcasted live. We've learned all sorts of new technology, which from a tent in our garden, for slightly more vintage folk musicians, is no bad thing.
No, it's good, isn't it? I mean, it's been driving me crazy because I'm one of those people. Well, I haven't been totally shielding because I think my doctors think I'm a lot iller than I am. But I've been locked down. I've done some great music because usually when you're lucky, like it sounds like you as well, you've done an album. I don't know whether it was all done in lockdown, but you have this new solo album out, which is really wonderful. I was a bit worried because I thought, oh no, she's going solo. Is that the end of Mary Hell? And of course...
yeah, no, of course not. I don't know if you know, Paul, but I started as a singer-songwriter on my own.
You did.
I started writing in 1982,
yeah,
when I was 16, and we moved to Chester from Manchester, my family, and I found the Chester Folk Club and started playing there, going every week. I had three chords, and then a year in, I knew four chords, and then I knew a couple of minor chords. And
yeah.
I started writing around that time and playing probably about 5 years later, playing obviously just semi-professionally, but in folk clubs. And
yes,
the memories I've got of the small clubs, you know, where they say to you, you're on straight after the raffle, and a half hour set for 40 quid, and there was no raffle.
Unbelievable, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, it's a lovely thing. I know you had a couple of albums out before, didn't you? And before you joined up with Mary Hell.
Yeah.
And I love your style of songwriting. The album, by the way, if you don't know yet, it's out now, really, I guess. It's called No Place Like Tomorrow. And it's a really, really thoughtfully and creatively written album. I love the way you address lots of issues in it, in the album. Some of them are a little bit quirky, but I love the way you, I'd love to go through all the tracks, but there's one that I was riveted to, which was Union Jack House, because I love the way you've done it like an elevator going up, and each floor is a different kind of family or a different kind of situation for people, and it starts like quite low down, and then I love the little Kentucky bin on Friday or whatever it was lyric that's in there. Lovely thing. And then you go up to and then you go upstairs again, like going up, and it's done like an elevator. You've got to listen to this, people. Check this out. The whole album's great, but this particular track as well, when you get up to the top level about MPs fiddling expenses and things, which I thought was hilarious.
Yeah, and also the very top floor, the aristocracy at the top, and they're really wealthy property-wise, but they've got no cash, so they're burning their own Chippendale chairs. I loved the picture of that, and all the servants have gone. because they can't afford them anymore. So
I love it.
The imagery of that.
Exactly, the imagery of that when you sit and listen. Because at first, excuse me, I noticed there's no lyric sheet in the album, and I thought, oh, that's a shame. I love looking and reading lyrics, but actually, it's quite, in a way, it's quite good not to have a lyric sheet because you tend to pay more attention. I don't know if that's a deliberate thing or not, but I listen to the lyrics more intently.
Can I be really honest? It came down to cost.
All right,
it cost quite a lot more to have a proper booklet. And if you just have a smaller, if you just have your images and the titles of your songs and so on, it costs a lot less. And I think it's probably environmentally a bit better as well, because obviously we're all looking towards that now. But it would be great to have. Damien, our manager, and I have just been discussing possibly a book with some photos and some song lyrics in as well to go out at some point. But if anybody wants to know any of the lyrics, they're very welcome to just Facebook me, and I'll deliver them.
Oh, that's very kind of you. I love to just listening to it, and I've got to tell you, it's been in my car with me on the way to Sainsbury's, and it's been it's been played around the house, and me and my partner Vonnie had a nice little dance in the kitchen to Valentine's Waltz, which I thought was a lovely track.
Thank you again.
I love the a bit like the best comedians do, the observational comedy is a really great way of doing comedy for the stand-ups and things, because you can sort of relate to it. You sit there, you go, oh yeah, I know what he's saying, you know. And your lyrics are very similar, because I've watched people having rows in pubs before, which is what the Valentine's Waltz is all about. I won't spoil the plot for people.
It is, that's right, it's about a big row. I was in the south of France and Spain border. And there was this lovely event in the square, and it was so romantic, and this couple were just lovely, you know. They were dressed up to the nines, and they had this huge row, and I really can relate to it, because I've watched those rows, and I've been the rowy as well at times. Thinking, oh, we've ruined that now, because we've had a massive row, and I've stormed off, or you've stormed off, and this tune that's just playing in the background, which is made for waltzing to, and you just hope that by the time they get back together, that it's a short-lived, nice, Latin, passionate row, and that, you know, it'll be short-lived, and they'll come back together before the end of the refrain and dance out the end of the waltz. I really enjoyed writing that. And the woman in it, the woman from the East who put me at ease, saying about this hope for the dying in her old philosophies, that was true as well. There was such a woman, and she was very philosophical, and saying, you know, life's just a river, and you just flow along, and you don't worry about the end. We've made all that stuff up about worrying about dying, and it was fantastic, to almost a privilege really, to be able to put that into song, because I know it was somebody's evening, that.
it's a little snippet of life. Which I think all the way through the album, there's a recurring theme of love and love lost, and people's human beings, and sometimes their fragile nature in a way, which I think's lovely. I mean, I like the way you've coupled the Valentine's Waltz with Made in the Stars, which is a track that follows it, which is a kind of a different kind of breakdown, if you like, with a couple that don't talk to each other. So there's all these like conversations going throughout the album. You know, it's a lovely thing. Made in the Stars is really quite brutally honest song as well, isn't it? From a storyteller's point of view, it's got some great lyrics.
I think they're kind of the other side of the coin. They're not the passionate rowing types, but the ones who maybe don't say very much to each other and just brush it under the carpet. So therefore, their elephant in the room is really huge.
Yeah,
they're not wearing it. They're not wearing their love on their sleeve. So they end up with this sort of void between them. But I took it from a painting by Hopper. I don't know if you know it. It's just there's a couple at a bar in the choruses of the song. They remind each other that they've got the right to be free and happy. They've got the right to that. You know, they're not saying terrible things about each other, and they've not hurt one another. So they've got the right to sort of emancipate each other and be free.
Yeah, it's a lovely song. I love the way you are. You must be like a constant people watcher, Virginia. You know, like
I do. I do like nothing more than sitting with a cup of coffee, preferably in France, because I love going to France.
Yeah.
And also you get all the wild gesticulation in France, don't you? All the drama with the hands and the voices, and everything's a little bit louder and a bit more.
Oh yeah, very much so. Yeah.
I love all that. I love sitting with a cup of coffee or a glass of wine, perhaps.
Absolutely.
And just watching it all unfurl. And at festivals as well, I really enjoy. I promise I won't name any names, I really promise.
Well, you know, when I'm making
it. Why has he got those legs behind him? There's a story in that. Oh, Paul.
Yeah, you see, this is the problem, you see. You've seen my studio now, and then also when I meet up with you, I'm going to be worried that I'm not going to turn up on one of your songs.
I'm going to send you a photo of similar legs, but in like wellies, massive muddy wellies.
Nice.
And to put those just to have the other side of the coin there as well.
Oh, you are kind. I look forward to that. Your friends in the band have helped you out a little bit with it. Obviously, fiddle player and obviously husband, John.
They helped me out a bit, but to be honest, it's more pity on my part. I want to give them some work. You know, they're nice lads. They're not massively talented and they need a bit of work. So I've allowed John to produce the album.
Yes.
And I've allowed Neil McCartney to play the fiddle
and
Nick Davis to play the bass. Yeah, three lucky fellas.
Give them a little go. You know, they might need to practice. Not.
Yes. Seriously, they're great, and they've really enhanced the album. And I think we've all enjoyed, because we've done some live playing together with Virginia Kettle Project. We call it Virginia Kettle and the Dream Keepers. That it's been really enjoyable because it is different. Obviously, we all get on and know each other well, but the music is a bit more ethereal. There's more space in it, obviously, because in Merry Hell we're a crash and a bang and a wallop, aren't we, really?
You are,
so
you are.
It's nice to have
fantastic.
That laid off.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, if anybody hasn't seen Mary Hell, well, I don't believe anybody hasn't seen Mary Hell of late. You're doing so well with the band. And you're integral to that, because I love your stage presence, whether you're doing solo or whether you're in the band, because you're a bit like me, really, in a way. You don't really mind if there's thousands of people there or just 10 people there, as long as they're listening to your songs and they're all enjoying themselves, which to me is the communication, which is what it's all about. This is why we do this. But I was watching a YouTube clip of you. I think it was at the wonderful Shrewsbury Folk Festival, and you're in between songs, and just out of the blue, all of a sudden, you perk up and go, "See the face light up of the one you love with Terry's all gold," or something like that. And the whole band look at you as if you've absolutely gone mad and taken leave of all your senses. And it was just a crazy and funny thing to see. But that's just you. You come up with these really quirky things sometimes.
Yeah, I'm a little bit... There are a few random moments when you just... I think it's almost like a tension, because the songs are really really good, and some of them are very meaningful, aren't they, the Merry Hill ones? And I just sometimes like to break that moment of tension with the Terry's all going... I probably haven't told you, but somebody actually presented me with a box of Terry's Own Gold.
Right, okay.
So it could be a cry. Because they quite enjoyed those moments. I told the audience to sit up straight, because it annoys me when they slouch. And they get too relaxed and it's all one-way traffic, and I want them to sit up and realise themselves.
There's not much...
I've always been quite surprised that I've not got told off.
There's nowhere to hide from you. So much fun. And your songs, I mean, I know you write a lot for Mary Hell, but I love... you've been married quite a few years.
I think it's about 18 years now.
Yeah, it goes by, I mean, gosh.
100 years we've been married.
Oh, it's been so long, you know. Down south, we say, "Oh, you get less for murder, mate." But you've got this growing song about your son leaving, and I related totally to this. And this is the great thing about this album, everybody who's listening to this. When you play the album through, you'll find it. You probably might have heard it already before you listen to this interview, but you will recognise lots of scenarios in life when you go through this album. And this growing gone about your son leaving home, I know exactly how you felt. I've had two daughters, one's 33, one's 30. When she went off to art college, one of them, you know, you look at the room and it's all empty, and your daughter, and you've described that perfectly in Growing Gone here. It's a great song, this. Did Did you just...
Oh, thank you.
Did you just...
Yeah, I really did. I think a lot of people can relate to it, whether you check children go to university or just leave home, you know, the age they're at. And it is, it's a... Because you're supposed to be delighted, aren't you? And you are, really. You're like, yes, they've got to that stage now. You don't want them to be at home forever. It's all good. But the dynamic in the house really changes. That's what I found. It's like you've always been the one in control of, you know, looking after them and making sure that they're nourished mentally and physically and all of this. And then they're out on their own. And that's where does that leave you? That's quite a strange shift for you as a parent. And anyway, it's a lovely song, and thank you for enjoying it. But he's back now. He's back. So I've written another one called Bugger, Bugger Off.
Bugger Off, yeah. They always come back, don't they? Mine do. Mine, actually, as we speak, Virginia, I've just had a text. I live down on the coast now in Kent, down right as far as you can go before you fall in the water on the Denge Marshes, etc. My daughter, both still live in Rochester, which is where I was heralded and grew up and done lots of things with. But I go to see them quite often. But I got a text this morning. Dad, have you got a wheel pump and a battery charger, please? And she hasn't lived with me for donkey's years. What's that about? So maybe I'm going to leave Lyd, do a 50-mile trip up to Medway to go and do a tyre for her. So they never really leave, do they? You know what I mean?
No, they never really do. That's right.
And that's some sort of...
That's brilliant.
Get it all the time. I get it all the time. She finds out really bizarre things as if I'm still down the road when I'm 35, 40 miles away. And that concludes part one of my chat with Virginia. Click on part two for more stories and shenanigans